All right, good evening. You're listening to KBOO 90.7. The time is 6 o'clock, and you're about to hear The Underground.
Have you ever had an image about your body? Well, you're in luck, because this is The Underground, and the theme is body image.
I was never cool in school. I'm sure you don't remember me. And now it's been 10 years. I'm still wondering who to be. And I'd love to mix in circles, cliques, and social coteries. That's me. Hand me my nose ring.
Can we be happy?
Show me the mosh pit.
Can we be happy?
We can be happy underground.
This first piece is by John Wall, and he will read a story about the effects of steroids.
Steroids. What are they? How are they obtained? How are they used? How are they abused? These are questions that I will answer. Doctors prescribe steroids to patients for legitimate medical purposes such as loss of function of testicles, breast cancer, low red blood cell count, delayed puberty, and debilitated states resulting from surgery or sickness. Anabolic steroids is the most common type of abused steroids. Anabolic steroids are primarily used by bodybuilders, athletes, and fitness buffs who claim steroids give them a competitive advantage and/or improve their physical performance. Also, individuals in occupations requiring enhanced physical strength are known to take these drugs. The following story is about a young man named Craig, whose abusive use of anabolic steroids led to life-changing events. It was written by Kate Bailey and adapted from Heads Up, Real News About Drugs and Your Body, from Scholastic Incorporated in 2003. Every time he passed a beer, Craig flexed his muscles. He wanted to look insanely big, like an action figure. When I walked into a room, I wanted to turn heads, he says. People did notice Craig's 225-pound, 5'9" frame, but what they didn't see was the physical damage and psychological turmoil going on inside. The story behind the bulk was 5 years of steroid abuse and a struggle with muscle dysmorphia, a condition in which a person has a distorted image of his or her body. Men with this condition think that they look small and weak, even if they are large and muscular. Before a trip to Walt Disney World in Orlando, he was feeling overweight. He wanted to look good with his shirt off, so he resolved to get fit. A student at Bristol Community College in Fall River, Massachusetts, he started going to a nearby gym. Running on the treadmill, he slimmed down fast, losing 20 pounds in a month. But lean wasn't Craig's ideal. My whole priority was, I wanted people to say, that guy's huge. He lifted weights and experimented with steroidal supplements, also called dietary supplements. These drugs promise to build muscles. Despite potential risks and unclear effectiveness, they can be bought legally over the counter at many stores. But what Craig was looking for couldn't be bought in a store. So he turned to anabolic steroids, drugs derived from the male sex hormone testosterone. Under a doctor's supervision, anabolic steroids can have some legitimate medical uses, as do corticosteroids, a different type of steroid used to reduce swelling. But to use steroids as Craig did, for muscle building in a healthy body, is illegal. This didn't stop him, neither did the many grim potential side effects. Craig thought he knew exactly what he was getting into, and like 4% of high school seniors, according to a 2002 NIDA-funded study, and an estimated hundreds of thousands of adults, he took steroids anyway. Craig's appearance was that important to him. The scale was my enemy. Every pound meant so much to me, he says. Craig constantly compared himself to others. He drove his friends and family crazy, asking, is that guy bigger than me? What about that guy? He never had complete satisfaction. Some days, I'd be arrogant, wearing shorts to show off my quads. Other days, I'd be a disaster. On a non-lifting day, I'd have to wear big baggy clothes. Craig's steroid use escalated over time. He had begun taking oral steroids exclusively. But when he heard that injectable steroids were more effective, he overcame a fear of needles. At his worst, he was injecting 3 to 4 times a day and taking 10 pills on top of that. The drugs took their toll. Craig's hair fell out, acne popped up all over his back, and his face swelled. Then, something even more serious happened. He started having chest pains. Craig was having heart problems of the emotional sort, too. "I don't even remember how much of a jerk I was," he says. There was a lot of screaming and yelling at home, and ultimately, the end of his marriage and custody battle over his 1-year-old son, Jake. Craig's wife said that Craig, then 25, couldn't see their child until he passed a drug test. That was the moment when everything changed for Craig. He knew he had to quit. On Father's Day of 2001, Craig went cold turkey. He knew he needed help, so his parents found him a psychiatrist who treated him through the better part of a year. Today, Craig's priorities have changed. He still wants to be a head turner, but for a different reason. Now I'd rather be walking into a room with my son, who is now 2, and have people thinking, wow, he's the greatest dad in the world. The end. My opinion on steroids is simple. I believe steroids should be used for medical purposes only, not for enhancing one's body. Also, athletes should not be able to use steroids because they are role models for young children, and we don't want our children growing up thinking that using steroids is okay. And besides, using steroids is cheating, and we don't want to teach that to our kids either. For the KBOO Youth Crew, this is John Wall.
John Wall talking about the effects of steroids.
Anne and Bella are 2 9-year-old girls that together make up the band King. They played and were interviewed here at KBOO.
Hello, my name is Anne, stands for A minor, and I'm 9 years old, and I live in Portland, Oregon.
I'm Bella, and I am 9 years old.
I'm way older than her, 2 months older.
And well, the band started when it was really a setup because my dad wanted me to meet Anne because he was friends with Josh Berger.
My dad.
Yeah. And so we met up
at my second gig.
And
we didn't kind really of get along.
It didn't really work. So Amelia just walked past me.
I'm not very popular at school, and I'm like, hi, and then I just run off and stuff.
And that's what she did to me, and I was really weirded out. Like,
yeah, she must be one of those popular chicks. I don't really like them.
And then
we had a play date,
and we wanted our name to be
Get Out of Our Way,
but it just didn't work out. It didn't work out. We wanted a different name,
so we called
ourselves King.
You can surrender or you can't. Sean, a.k.a. your world.
First song that we played was We Will Destroy Our Destination. And so my dad and I were going to this party thing at my dad's friend's house. And we were looking it up on Google, like how we get there from our house. He said, this is our destination. And I came up with the word denominate. And I later forgot the word, so we did destroy. So then we came up with, we will destroy our destination.
We will destroy
our destination.
What was the
next song? I'm listening to the radio.
I want to listen to the radio.
Hello, this is Gustav with 94.7, and here's Queen with We Will Rock You.
Something else.
And here's King with I Like Big Butts.
I like big butts and I cannot lie. You other us can't deny. When a girl walks in with eight waist and you get a bigger round thing in your face, you get feelings. I want to listen to something else, but it has to be good. Deep pulls through all because of you. Pressing on my feeling song for him. But you took him away, wish I could stay, but really, he has it. The ticket, the intermission between me and him. You took him, you stole him. I wish I could take him back. But no, again I'll say it. You took him, you stole him. Now, goodbye, half of Portland, Oregon.
Woo. See ya.
This was Bella. King.
This was Am. A minor. Yeah.
That was the band King. Their music and an interview.
This is Rhythm saying that that was a band that I played with. My band, The Legal Guardians, had played a show with them.
This next piece is an exploration of food relates to body image.
When thinking about body image, I thought to myself, bam, that's it, food. That's one of the key elements of image. What would body image be without food? The two cultures I have experienced firsthand are French and American culture. In 2005, I went to Bordeaux, France, to be in a host family. The two eating styles are one and the opposite. I have always been to the ideal of food as a culture, and when visiting family dining in France, I have already known some things about French meals from school. The absolute shock came to me, ironically, when I returned to the United States. I realized how different the two cultures are when it comes to food. It feels to me that the French are more oriented in the enjoyment of sitting down with people and eating for a long time, and Americans are more oriented in the way of finishing the food fast and getting to the next thing in life. This is slightly an over-exaggeration, but in ways it is unbelievably true. The French typically eat at certain times during the day. They believe that it is essential to have a good sit-down meal twice a day. Also, the meals themselves are very formulaic. A traditional French meal consists of an appetizer, then the main course that consists of meat or a vegetable, then the third course that usually consists of the cheese course. Cheese is very important in their diet because French don't usually drink milk. The last course is usually some fruit or dessert. I believe that this is a pretty balanced meal. Of course, this isn't always the case for all meals in France. It is becoming more and more prominent that the life of a Frenchman is speeding up. People are increasingly going to fast food places that have recently opened in France, such as McDonald's. In America, it is common to snack between meals. Also, American meals usually consist of only one course. This course usually consists of most of the items that the French meal consists of, but all put together. Americans are known for their constant snacking and their astronomical serving proportions at restaurants. After a while, the American people don't even notice the amount on their plates. Oh yeah, by the way, this is the main reason why the word, quote, doggy bag was created. Something that should be taken into consideration is simply the idea that there are two very different cultures that, with two very different philosophies on food. The key point is that the two cultures are subtly mixing together. It shows more in the mixing of American culture and France, because France has always had a very specific way of eating. This makes it more vulnerable to change. So to say, an absence of change eventually brings change. It is less prevalent in French culture to mixing into American culture, because American society is already a melting pot of cultures, and they are constantly being introduced to society in the form of ethnic restaurants. As I walked down the streets of Bordeaux and I saw people eating on the street, it was a hot summer day and people were eating ice cream. I walked with my friends down the largest street in Bordeaux to a bakery to get something. My friend entered and bought a Chinese panini, and I traversed the street to go get some ice cream. This is just a typical example of my life in France, where the habits of American culture creep through the other side of the world.
All right, that was a piece by one of our newer members here at the Youth Collective, Ariel, and that's actually his first piece for a show with us, so good job to him. His piece was a look at what body image would be like without food. So you are listening to The Underground here on KBOO 90.7. It's the Youth Public Affairs show that we have here. And coming up next, we're going to hear a piece by some people in the Youth Innovation for Education group here in Portland, Oregon. And they did a piece where they went out into the community and asked adults about how they felt about the Youth Bill of Rights that has been talked about and was just talked about recently in Portland. So here you go. Okay, maybe you don't. So, instead of that, we are going to hear something way cooler. So, there's this kid at Cleveland School here in Portland, Oregon, and they did some poetry for us and for the other students, and we recorded it, and here you go.
The Cable Youth Collective was invited to Cleveland High in southeast Portland to record poetry. Here is Jen, the teacher who invited us.
My name is Jennifer Wyant, and I teach 9th grade English at Cleveland High School. My classes have been reading, studying, analyzing, and writing poetry for the last 2 months. Students often come to poetry with a lot of stereotypes about what it is. I think many of these students changed their minds. I saw their poetry stretch and embrace the things that mean the most and express those messages powerfully. I really love something one of my students wrote as a preface to her final project, an anthology of her poems and other favorites. She wrote, "It's almost as if poetry is a different language that you learn when first born, and it stays with you always." I like that.
I'm Alana. I'm 15 years old, and this is called An Ode to Random. To everything, to anything you can think of, to a land without time, to imagination, to buy one, get one free, to the big green monster under your bed, who won't go away until Columbus admits he didn't discover America, he just got lost, to daytime TV, and watching your IQ go down at a rate of 10 points per second, because the young and the restless are young and restless, and that ain't ever gonna change. To goths, geeks, preps, and freaks. To passion, because life ain't nothing without passion. To Shakespeare, Einstein, and the inventor of the fire extinguisher. To La Vie Boheme. To the elephant and the donkey, confused as hell. To Napoleon, Bonaparte and dynamite alike, to carpe diem, to any emotion under the sky. I will find the gold at the end of that rainbow. Just give me time.
Justin Gregg, I can't believe. I can't believe I wasn't there for all those times that were amazing. That time went by so fast. I can't believe I'm falling and can't climb back up. I can't believe that it's almost over, and that it shall never be the same again. And I can't believe things are always changing.
I am Jessica Schmidt, and I'm 15.
And I'm Alana Bennett, and I'm 15. How I would paint addict, always waiting, mouth that can't form the word no, desperately want, desperately get, in the corner, never satisfied.
How I would paint confusion, head spinning inside out, going one way, then turning back, and going another, the mind half covered by a cloud.
How I would paint delusion, you see it, then it's gone, noises, images, all popping in and out, never in the right order, never the same.
How I would paint evil, eyes staring, always watching, glaring. Destruction here and a smirk there on its face. Has no feeling unless giving pain and gaining power.
How I would paint fake, not real yet still there.
How I would paint childhood, distant, vague. So many days, so many pictures, yet so hard to remember.
How I would paint time, going fast, not stopping just once, always on the go and taking you with it. Till death does it part, then it's over for you.
This poem is entitled Eighth Grade Poem. I was from nowhere. Now I am from here. I am still a no one. I used to not know what to have a bedroom was like. Now I do. I used to not know what safe was like. Now I do. I never felt loved for 13 years. The last two, I do. When I was little, I never thought of killing myself. I knew one of the two giants would finish me off. I've never complained. I've only told. I've had adults bawl a million rivers just thinking what it was like to be me. I have had wide eyes and open mouths gape and stare at me when I was finished. The kids never believed me because they were sheltered and never felt that pain. They don't know what it's like to be a pawn in hell's fury. I have seen and witnessed firsthand what it can do. My parents, plus the stepfather, have unleashed it on me. I have absorbed it. I've taken all the stitches and casts, black eyes, bones, the screams and tears, and harnessed it. I've created my own hell, one that I must watch and never show or release. Because of my parents, I must wait and wait. Never will my side of hell be reality, especially if I have children. Never.
My name is Charles Elder. I'm age 14. The skies look dark around the world. Giant monsters overpowered and helpless. Those who rebel drowned in a sea of anger. Somebody save us. Somebody save us. Giant monsters overpowered and helpless. The dead walk all around us. A voice says, out with the old, in with the new. Somebody save us. Somebody save us. The dead walk all around us. The horsemen stand by their king. Nation on nation crumbling down. Somebody save us. Somebody save us. The horsemen stand by their king. Those who rebel drown in a sea of anger. The stars are falling to the earth. Somebody save us. Somebody save us. And that poem is called The Revelation.
Hi, I'm John Carges. I'm 15, and this is my poem called Lost Acquaintances. How does this always seem to happen? How is it that this person I once found smart, funny, interesting, or important, that I once talked to, shared ideas with, laughed with, how is this person now sitting 5 feet away, at a bus stop, at the dentist's, at the library, without saying anything to me, without talking, sharing ideas, or laughing with me? And how am I, sitting here, and not acknowledging her presence? How did the brief conversation we used to share turn into a wave, a chin up, and then evaporate into nothing, as our social bonds were officially broken? And most importantly, how do we not care? It's not as if we don't like each other or just forgot each other. We both notice and are fully aware of what's going on. I see it in her piercing, dark eyes, the way she avoids mine like I try so desperately to avoid hers. Is it because of our pasts? Are we all just trying to hide something? When I tell this story, though they know perfectly who she was, what place she held in their past, my friends will simply say, "Who? I don't know her." Voicing aloud my thoughts, her thoughts, as we stood, as close together as ever, as lost acquaintances.
My name's Adair, and my poem's called I. I waited so long for you to realize I was waiting, waiting for you to notice I was the one who believed in you, that you could make it, but you never did, and I was still waiting, but now it's gone. I give up on you. I'm not waiting anymore.
Emma Graham Johnson, 15. When I turn 18, vote yes for a measure I don't understand. Buy cigarettes, but never smoke them. Sign for myself. Get out of the house. Go to college. Feel independent. Pretend like I don't need my parents. Go on a road trip. Laugh at freshmen. Reinvent myself. Learn to be an adult. Savor my ending teen years. Remember my past. Long for the ending of my teen years. Try to forget the past. Look forward to my future.
These poems were recorded at Cleveland High on June 7th and 8th.
That was poetry written and read by Cleveland High School students. Bravo.
All right, and here's a take two at the Youth Bill of Rights piece by the Youth Innovation for Education.
On May 17, 2005, a large group of young people spent the afternoon at the Matt Dishman Community Center. They were attending the event that started the writing of a Youth Bill of Rights. This document, supported by Mayor Tom Potter and Chair Lynn, would become the only present-day Bill of Rights for young people in the United States. After the kickoff, a small committee of youth was formed in order to begin drafting the Bill of Rights. 1 year later, on June 1st, another community event was held at the Expo Center. This time, hundreds of young people from all over Portland were editing and voting on a new draft of this Bill of Rights.
Although the paper and the event were focused on young people, we wanted to find out what the adults might think about the bill. We went to the streets to interview some unsuspecting passerby.
My name is Stephanie. I'm 29 years old. I live in North Portland.
Andrew. I live in Northeast Portland. I'm 42.
My name is Todd. I am 40 years old, and I live in Southeast Portland.
Santi Carter, age 25. The Pearl of Portland.
Tyler, I'm 20 years old and I'm from Atlanta, Georgia.
My name is Tim. I'm 21 and I live downtown.
Do you support the Youth Bill of Rights?
To have children speaking out and having a voice, I think it's just as important as equal rights among adults.
I would, yes.
I do support the Youth Bill of Rights. People under the age of 18 are legally one of the voiceless, unrepresented voices in our system. Internationally, this is an issue, not just only in Portland.
Yes.
Because, I mean, I think that we are all entitled to everything on here, everything that's in the bill.
Yes and no. I think a lot of the kind of requests in here kind of need adult enforcement, and because kids don't pay taxes and because kids can't work as the enforcement, I don't know, that kind of limits your voice in it, you know? It's really idealistic to say, you know, everybody has a right to 3 square meals and mental health facilities and medical facilities. I don't know, it doesn't seem to be the, the system that we live in, but it sounds like a good idea. It sounds like a good idea.
Sure. In your opinion, what are the weaknesses in the Youth Bill of Rights?
It's pretty thorough. I'm not sure I would add anything.
I really didn't say anything in there that would be a weakness.
It may be a little long for the average person to really get the gist of it.
The terms here are really broad. If you want to make this pack a punch, be very specific as to how. The tax loops, the ways of enforcement, the ways of funding. And does this mean, you know, more taxes? Does this mean that money has to be allocated from somewhere else to be put here? It's kind of vague as to where the funding and enforcement comes from.
I'm not sure of any weaknesses.
In your opinion, what are the strengths in the Youth Bill of Rights?
Protection for children, curricular activities after school, being safe apart and being able to have a voice in things that are important to them.
Youth are participating in the choices of things that affect them.
Everything that's in the bill.
Equal representation under the law. You know, the no taxation without representation. I don't think kids are adequately represented. They don't have a voice, and I think this is a positive step for that.
The health and the education part. Kids usually have no say in their education, really.
Is a Youth Bill of Rights something you would be willing to follow?
Oh, certainly. Certainly. I definitely support it.
Yes, I would. Yeah.
Yes, I would. Yeah. Yes, I would. I would. Yes.
But I think that it is a positive cause that we all should acknowledge.
Yes. Yes, it is.
Yeah. People under 18 need rights, too.
At the Bill of Rights event this June 1st, everyone there thought it was cool. However, the process doesn't end there. The committee is now working on ways to put the bill into action and extend the reach of its impact.
We are Youth Innovation for Education, a group of Portland area young people. Currently, we are working to produce a youth-led newsletter, gathering support for a television program that we will produce covering youth issues, and continuing to advocate for service learning within Portland Public Schools. We are recruiting new board members, so contact Lacey Hawkins at 503-988-4518 for applications or just for more information.
If you'd like to come out and meet some of the people you're hearing on the radio, Youth Innovation for Education will be at an event in the Pearl on July 6th for First Thursday. YIFE will be creating art and have a table set up. The event will be held on Northwest 10th and Gleason from 4 to 9 p.m. on Thursday, July 6th. We'll be joined by many talented artists and musicians such as Mo Jones, Kate Singh, Kira Rice, William Scriven, Ping, Keegan Smith, and many others. If you're interested in participating in the event, message Mo Jones on MySpace at www.myspace.com/mofee123. That's M-O-F-E-E 123.
Hello, my name is Zoe. I'm going to interview a few people here at Co-op on eating disorders. What's your name?
Lori.
How old are you?
I'm 48.
Do you think you're fat?
No, I don't think I'm fat. Thank you for asking.
Yes. How often do you weigh yourself?
I weigh myself maybe once a month.
If you could change something about your body, what would it be?
I don't think I would change anything about this particular body. It's perfect.
Do you know what anorexia is?
Yes, I do. Anorexia is an eating disorder where people have an image of themselves as fat, even if they're thin, and they will starve themselves or take other measures to try to avoid gaining weight.
Do you know anyone with anorexia eating disorder?
I did have a friend with an eating disorder, yes.
Could you tell us a little bit about that friend?
Basically, she had bulimia, which is where one makes oneself sick to avoid gaining weight, and it's a... Yeah, she's over it.
Have you ever gone on a diet?
Not for about 30 years.
Do you remember what kind of diet it was when you went on?
I remember many years ago when the high-protein shakes were all the fad. I tried living on high-protein shakes, and they were ghastly and tasted like chalk, and it was horrible, and I gave it up after a day and a half.
Do you ever make yourself sick because you feel too full?
No, I just make myself sick when people keep asking me questions.
Very nice. What's your name?
My name's Hillary.
How old are you?
41.
Do you think you're fat?
No.
How often did you weigh yourself?
My scale broke, so it's been about 6 months.
And if you could change something about your body, what would it be?
I would probably do something about my hips.
Do you know what anorexia is?
Yes, I do.
Do you know anyone with eating disorders?
Yes, several of my friends had eating disorders. Someone I went to college with did.
Would you tell us about one of these friends?
She was a little bit younger than I was, and she went away at a healthy weight, and she came back, and she was very skinny during a break from school. So during summer, she had lost a significant amount of weight, and she would wear big baggy clothes, and we kind of could tell something was up because her face was real bony all of a sudden, and it didn't look healthy.
Have you ever gone on a diet?
Yes, I have, but never any of the, like, South Beach or any of those. I did usually ones like a diet that bodybuilders do, where you cut out all fat proteins and you just do real lean protein.
How often do you diet?
Not anymore. I read a book called French Women Don't Get Fat about 2 months ago, and I just threw dieting out the window.
Do you ever make yourself sick because you feel too full?
No, but I do throw up very easily.
Whenever I see anyone throw up, I throw up, so. What's your name?
Kristen.
How old are you?
I'm 30.
Do you think you are fat?
No.
How often do you weigh?
Once every 3 months or so, whenever I happen to be near a scale. We don't own one.
If you could change something about your body, what would it be?
I need a haircut. Other than that, I have no idea. I'm fine with who I am.
Do you know what anorexia is?
Yes.
Do you know anyone with eating disorders?
In high school, I knew some girls with eating disorders. In college, I knew some, and some of my family have eating disorders.
Would you tell us about someone in family or one of your friends?
Sure. One of my family members had severe eating disorders as an early teenager, and looking now, she's much better, and she has the emotional support system to help her get through and get a positive body image for herself. But she can't even stand to look at the pictures of herself when she was 14. She still thinks that person looks fat, even though she's a beautiful 14-year-old girl. And it makes me sad to look at that picture, because I look at her and I think of how pretty that girl is and about how she still can't even see how pretty that girl was. So it's very hard. It affects just not even now. It's, you know, it'll always be a part of who she is, and it's hard.
Have you ever gone on a diet?
Yes.
And when?
Yeah, after my second child, I was on a diet for a while. That was, 6 years ago.
And what kind of diet was it?
Just a regular reduced-calorie diet. I tried to eat less, not any specific stuff. And I got to eat more dessert if I kept eating less all week. Then I got to have a full portion of dessert once a week. That was my reward.
Do you ever make yourself sick because you feel too full?
No, I might eat till I feel sick, but I don't make myself sick.
Thank you. How old are you?
I just turned 10.
Really? When?
Last May.
Cool. And what's your name?
My name is Evan.
Do you think you're fat?
No.
Do you think you're skinny?
Actually, kind of both.
Yeah. How often do you weigh yourself?
I don't.
You know? Have you ever weighed yourself?
Probably 10 or 11 times, but not that many.
If you could change something about your body, what would it be?
My hand. You see, I have ABS, and it's very annoying from time to time. So that's what I'd change about my body.
Do you know what anorexia is?
No.
Do you know anyone with an eating disorder?
Nope.
Have you ever gone on a diet?
Once. I told myself I wanted to become a vegetarian.
Are you still vegetarian?
A little, yeah.
Do you ever make yourself sick because you feel too full?
No.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for being here and letting me interview you. Thank you, Mom, Lori, Hillary, Kristen, and Evan. Hello, it's Megan Zoe, and I just got done interviewing people at my homeschooling group, and now I'm going to interview some people at my sister Brianna's graduation party. How old are you?
I am 18 years old.
What's your name?
My name is Brianna.
And you are the party girl?
Yes.
Do you think you're fat?
No.
No. How often do you weigh yourself?
I weigh myself, it's kind of sporadic because I don't have a way to weigh myself, so I kind of just weigh myself when I'm bored and I'm at someone's house that has a weigh thing.
If you could change something about your body, what would it be?
If I could change something about my body, I wouldn't burn so easily. I don't know, I don't really have any complaints.
Do you know what anorexia is?
Pretty much. I think I have a pretty good idea what anorexia is.
Do you know anyone with an eating disorder?
Not anymore. I have a friend that used to have an eating disorder, and I've known several people that I like went to school with that had eating disorders, but I don't know anyone currently.
Would you tell us about one person at your school or your old friend?
Well, one friend of mine had a disorder called bulimia, which is different than anorexia, in that they'll eat food, but then they throw it back up. And she had that through, like, most of high school because she thought she was fat, basically.
Have you ever gone on a diet?
Not in a really long time. I've kind of, like, I'm a most of the time vegan, vegetarian, and, like, a lot of people think that's a diet. So in that case, yes. But other than that, I haven't really gone on a, you know, diet, like only eat so many servings of something, only eat whatever kind of thing, probably since I was about 10.
And could you tell us a little bit about your diet when you were 10?
I don't really remember anything about the diets I used to go on. I would go on just, like, a lot of crazy, like, self-inflicted diets because, like, I thought I was overweight then. And, you know, it'd be things like, I can only eat two meals a day or I will only eat one of everything or something. Like, it was never really a strict, real diet.
Do you ever make yourself sick because you feel too full?
No.
Yeah. Do you think that other people think you're fat?
I don't know. That's a good question. Like, stupid kids that come into my work will be like, you're stupid, you're ugly, you're fat, whatever. But I think most of the time they just do it to try and piss me off. And other people may think I'm fat, but whatever.
Okay, that was Brianna. How old are you?
23.
What's your name?
David.
Do you think you're fat?
No.
How often do you weigh yourself?
Occasionally, probably once every few months.
Do you ever make yourself sick because you feel too full?
No, I don't.
And last question. Do you think other people think you're fat?
Yes. Just kidding, no.
Thank you. That was David. How old are you?
22.
What's your name?
Becky.
Do you think you're fat?
Yes.
How often do you weigh yourself?
Once a week.
If you could change something about your body, what would it be?
I'd like to be skinnier.
Do you know what anorexia is?
Yes, I do.
Do you know anyone with an eating disorder?
I don't know for certain, but I suspect a few people.
Have you ever gone on a diet?
Yes.
Could you tell us a little bit about that diet?
Well, right now I'm on Weight Watchers, which is a plan where they have nutritionalists analyze you and they help you make better decisions about your eating so that you can lose weight by eating healthier.
How often do you diet?
I'm on a diet right now. Usually once a year I'll go on a diet.
Do you ever make yourself sick because you feel too full?
No.
And last question, do you think other people think you are fat?
Yes.
Thank you, Becky. Our next person is Amber. How old are you?
21, a month away from being 22.
What's your name?
Amber.
Do you think you're fat?
Not really, no.
How often do you weigh yourself?
I really don't weigh myself very often. Yeah. I don't have a scale at my house, so it's whenever I'm somewhere that has one and I get the inclination to do so.
If you could change something about your body, what would it be?
I really don't know what it would be.
Do you know what anorexia is?
Yes.
Do you know anyone with an eating disorder?
Not right now, but when I was in school, there were a lot of girls who went to my school who were anorexic or bulimic, and I had a friend in my grade who went to, like, a rehabilitation camp for an eating disorder, but I never found out exactly what it was.
Have you ever gone on a diet?
Not really. I've heard Brianna talking, and I know she gave the same answer, but I am vegetarian, leaning towards vegan, and that's, some people consider that to be a diet, but, I mean, it is for health reasons, but it's not for weight loss reasons. I feel healthier if I try to minimize the amount of junk foods that I intake.
Do you ever make yourself sick because you feel too full?
No.
And last, do you think other people think you are fat?
I think that some people probably do, because there are people with, you know, really strict standards for what's fat and what's not. And, you know, I do have some fat on my stomach. I could probably lose 20 or 30 pounds and still be healthy, but I really don't care.
So, thank you. That was everybody. And this is Zoe from Cable Youth Collective signing off. Thank you.
All right.
That was Zoe. This is Zoe, and that was my piece. And for more information or help with eating disorders, go to betterway.com.
betterwaycounseling.com or contact A Better Way Counseling Center at 818-NW 17th Avenue, Portland. This is their phone number, 503-226-9061.
All right. Thank you, Zoe. Now we have an interview. The subject is tattoos. And it's Brianna will be interviewing Dennis and Ben. So here we go.
One. Right. And she made she made that very clear that it was just a dumb bullshit job.
We're going to...
So I had the
legal We're going to do an interview.
And I had... What was the second one? Oh, the position... I still don't know what they do at Pacific Corps... filing applications or something, something about
this. His son is actually a member of the youth collective, so we're going to be talking about their tattoos. So if you guys wouldn't mind just going around saying your name and give us a description of your tattoo, since people listening can't see it.
All right, my name is Dennis, and I'm not very heavily tattooed, but I have a tattoo on my right calf that is a it's a Tibetan symbol for eternity. It's kind of like a Celtic knotwork sort of symbol. And then I've got an old alchemy symbol on the back of my neck. And I've got my daughter's name on my left forearm in old English letters. And I've got a 8-ball and 2 dice on my right bicep.
All right.
This voice belongs to Ben. I have one tattoo. It's a solid black no smoking sign, about as wide as my bicep, which isn't very wide.
All right. So why did you guys want to get your tattoos? What really drove you to actually get it put on your body?
I just think tattoos are pretty cool, and I always have. And I had a really good friend growing up. We were both like the artists of class in the classroom, and his dad was a tattoo artist, and he used to bring his dad's flash books of all the tattoos that would be up on the walls of the shop. And my friend Neil would bring those books to class, and we would just pore over them and say, oh man, when I turn 18, I'm going to get a big Viking on my arm, and I'm going to totally get that panther and the chick on my chest. And so I've just always wanted one. And I waited until I was 19 because I didn't want to get something really stupid that I'd regret on my body. So I waited till I felt like I was old enough to get something that would always be kind of meaningful to me.
Awesome.
And I'd just like to ask, so that worked out? It's all stayed very meaningful and you don't regret any of them?
No, I don't regret any of them.
That makes me feel better because I'm pretty sure I'm not going to regret mine, but who knows about the future. I got mine because I love smoking so much. And people who smoke, and people who ask me for cigarettes, and, you know, cancer. Cancer was my main motivation here.
All right. So, what was it like when you actually went in to get your first tattoo? Like, I know, Ben, you got yours when you were 18, correct?
No.
And Dennis, you got yours when you were... when you were 19, your first?
Yep.
So what was it like going into this place where you know someone's going to, like, spend hours poking you with needles and putting something on your body that's never going to go away? What was that experience like?
For me, it was pretty cool because I was silk screening T-shirts in New York at the time, and I was doing T-shirts for this pretty famous tattoo artist named Spiderweb. And he was one of the old school guys that tattooed, like, all the Hell's Angels, and he did a lot of advocacy trying to legalize tattooing in New York City. He tattooed a woman named Annie Sprinkle on the steps of the Metropolitan Museum of Art to sort of protest the illegality of tattooing. And so I saw him as this sort of legendary, like, old school, kind of grandfatherly artist type. But he was also, you know, old school in the sense that he'd start drinking at noon and be tattooing throughout the day and, like, popping pills. And so he was definitely a character, and he knew me well from printing his shirts, and so I just knew that I'd have a good experience with him and that he would treat me really well, and it was really fun. And while I was in the waiting room waiting for him to tattoo me, I remember we heard this big thud, because the big burly guy that he was tattooing right before me got faint during the tattoo and fell off the stool. And the thud we heard was this biker guy, like, hitting the ground. And I had to go next, so it was, like, you know, really scary for me.
Can I just interject quickly and ask, which was the first tattoo that you got?
Oh, the first one was the one on my right calf, which is the sort of Tibetan knotwork.
Sweet.
Yeah.
I actually did get mine when I was 19, because I'm 19 now.
Oh, sorry.
It's okay. It's not a big deal. But I didn't rush out and get it right away. I am a responsible adult. But I actually did a little research about tattoos, because I am not the sort of person who usually does stuff that is painful and potentially dangerous. I read about one episode where a guy actually died after getting a tattoo because he went into shock and, like, fell off a bridge or into oncoming traffic or something. I don't know. You know, I looked up stuff about care, and I tried to buy some lotions and stuff, and it took me days of preparation. And I bought a half gallon of apple juice to keep my blood sugar up so I wouldn't go into shock. And so I went to the tattoo shop, and I drank a half gallon of apple juice beforehand. And the guy, it was a really cool place. The guy, there's a few things I have to mention. The guy drove a hearse, the guy who owns the place. I thought that was pretty cool. On the inside of the place, there was a whole bunch of blood splattered on all the mirrors for, you know, atmosphere, I guess. And got down to it.
Not real blood.
But not real blood, I think. There was a lot of it. So it would have had to have been a lot of different people donating to the cause. But sat down and did not watch myself being tattooed. It was a kind of awkward angle, but also didn't sort of want to watch the needle going up and down, all that. And I was also listening to music to distract myself. Effective way of doing it. They use lots of different needle sets. I learned a lot of stuff about tattooing. Sometimes they've got just more than one needle going into you at once. It's like a set of needles sweeping across your arm.
Some of them are thicker, too, and others are thinner.
Yeah.
It's another thing you learn.
Yeah.
So we don't have too much longer, but I did want to ask you guys, after you got your tattoo or your tattoos, what was the reaction to the people that knew you? Did they expect it, or were they like, why did you get that?
For me, no, I've never really been gotten very, you know, a big reaction. I think all my friends always expected me to be totally full of tattoos by this age, and so I've been pretty reserved, I think. So I think everyone just, you know, complimented it and just, you know, I picked tattoos that I think just kind of, like, fit who I am. I don't know, I just never really got even much of a reaction from my mom or my dad or, you know, my family members that I thought would freak out. You know, they were pretty cool about it.
Well, my parents, up to the day before, were telling me don't do it. But after I got it, I found that they're very eager to show off my tattoo on my behalf, which I think is very dumb. And I told them this. I said, if you want to show off a tattoo, get one yourself. But as to the people I know and their thoughts on it, I did tell all my friends, but they didn't think I was serious because, you know, I did want to get something that nobody else would really get. And so nobody believed me that I'd actually do it. But a lot of people sort of apologize when they're smoking around me now. So I guess that's a step up. It's not quite the point where I want to be at. But at least I get an apology.
All right. Awesome, guys. Well, I'd like to thank you both, Dennis and Ben, for being on this panel with us today. And I hope that any future tattooing goes well for you. And thank you guys again for being on the show.
Thanks for asking me to be.
All right, thank you. That was Brianna interviewing Dennis and Ben about tattoos. I found that really interesting. I can't believe that guy actually drove a hearse. That was pretty funny. Okay, now some announcements with Rhythm.
Like, he came on, like, right after I asked the question. And he's like, all right, you have 90 seconds. And I was like...
I wanted to give people caution about, like, bloodborne pathogens and, like, go to a legitimate place. And,
Hey!
We don't
what
have
are you doing?
Real
yeah,
we're
in reality. Yeah, we're in reality.
Did that.
Birthday card to one of them. Then industrial complex in the U.S. and the trade-offs that are being made to support this growth following the movie the Therapeutic Music with host a guerrilla poetry showcase. A donation of $5 or a dictionary is requested. All proceeds go to Portland Books to Prisoners and Books to Oregon Prisoners. For more info, email pdxbooks2prisoners@riseup.net or visit www.bookstooregonprisoners.org.
All right, thank you, Rhythm, for those announcements. Now, for the last piece of the night, this is Sean with some... This is Sean with his piece.
So some friends and I have recently been talking about creating a Portland Student Union, which is exactly what it sounds like, really. An organization with hundreds or thousands of students from Portland Public Schools that demands better school conditions and more power for students. This student union idea might sound kind of crazy, but it's been done a million times in the labor world, successfully too. Labor unions, in general, exist to maintain or improve working conditions. Labor unions have had tons of victories in the past. Before the 8-hour day movement was won, industrial workers were often forced to work up to 16 hours a day, 6 days a week. Other labor union victories include fair wages, better health benefits, and ending workplace discrimination. So, you might be thinking, but doesn't the existing student government serve this purpose? Don't they represent the voice of students? Unfortunately, student government has little influence over important school decisions, and when they try to get involved, the administration slams the door in their face. PPS needs something larger, with more students directly involved and with more freedom to say what needs to be said. The need for a union becomes even more apparent when you think about the recent powerlessness of students. At Jefferson High School, there was widespread student opposition to this year's redesign plan, but the plan was approved anyways. At Lincoln High School, over 40 students applied to be on the principal selection committee, but only 2 were allowed. There's also a committee right now that's looking at how to solve the Lincoln Cluster's overcrowding problem. The committee has talked about some pretty radical changes, from ending transfers to Lincoln to making Lincoln its own independent school district. Despite the seriousness of these discussions, only one of the committee's 30 members is a student, and PPS has refused to allow more. Sometimes the powerlessness of students is manifested in more personal ways. Some students face embarrassment or harassment by teachers. Sometimes bullying is ignored or excused. I've heard of non-English speaking students being placed into special ed programs instead of ESL. The current reality is that students have no control over the institutions they're forced to spend their days in, and the administration of PPS is consciously denying students the right to have a say. That's exactly why a Portland Student Union needs to be formed. As the membership of the union grows, and as we cultivate chapters in individual schools, our power will grow. So what could we use that power for? What could the union demand? Obviously, meaningful student representation in school decisions needs to be emphasized. We could demand equal representation on teacher hiring committees and work with site councils and PTAs. We could also demand that students be involved in planning curriculum, discipline policies, district budget decisions, and more. A big part of this is redefining the role of student government so that it has a more meaningful, active role in the leadership of schools. Also related is that the student representative on the school board isn't democratically elected by the student body and isn't allowed a real vote in school board decisions. Anything less than a democratically elected representative with an equal vote is a slap in the face to students. Other demands could include having more full-time counselors in schools, more trainings for teachers, including cultural competency trainings, and we could even work with the teachers union to earn them better wages, because happy teachers are happy students. The student union is little more than an idea right now, and we need you to get involved to make it grow. If you're interested, you can contact us at pdxstudentunion@gmail.com or call us at 971-222-4153. In the meantime, keep it real.
All right, thank you, Sean. That was Sean talking about the Portland Public Schools idea for a student union. All right. So thanks for listening to The Underground. The Underground is hosted every fourth Wednesday by the KBOO Youth Collective. We meet Wednesday at KBOO at 6 p.m. And to plan our show, let's see. If you're interested in getting involved, come on down or call our youth advocate, Aaron Yankee, at 503-231-8032, extension 511. Or email her at kbooyouth@hotmail.com. We also do a music show, The Youth Randomonium, which is the last Friday of the month, which is coming up in 2 days. And that is from 11 to midnight. And we're always looking for new music by anyone under 21 of any style. And check out our website at kbooyouth.com. The first and third Wednesday of the month, Circle A Radio airs this time. And the second Wednesday of the month, Hole in a Bucket, a public affairs show on homelessness, airs from 6 to 7.